GiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGiantsGi 888-729-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. Today we're going to continue to preview the upcoming 2017 season slate for the Giants. Week 10, they're going to play the San Francisco 49ers. So we're going to momentarily get an entire layout of the land for the San Francisco 49ers. And, you know, this is a team, unlike some of the others that the Giants are going up against, Paul, this year, that is in a huge transition mode in terms of leadership as well as personnel.
And the fact that the Giants don't play them till November may mean that all bets are off and everything we discuss in the next several minutes could easily change. In fact, it probably will by the time the second half of the season rolls around. But nonetheless, we're going to try to figure out exactly what it is that the Niners bring to the table, who they might be looking at for playing time, who may be the key players in featured roles, and you know, what their philosophy is going to be this season. Because quite frankly, I think a lot of people, justifiably so, think this team is an also-ran.
And that's why we're going to certainly go over the ins and outs of the San Francisco 49ers. So glad you could join us here for Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live as we get you set for the 2017 campaign. And we mentioned in Week 10 in November, the Giants are going to visit the San Francisco 49ers. It's going to be one of four West Coast trips for the team this season. And to provide more insight right now on the Niners, what to expect from them, we're now joined by Bonte Hill, sports talk show host on KGMZ 95.7 The Game in San Francisco. Bonte, Lance Middle, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Absolutely, man. It's a great morning, man. The sun is out here on the West Coast, man. A lot of moves happening in the NBA, baseball. But let's talk some football. I'm ready, man. It's almost here.
That's absolutely right. Put the Warriors away. We don't need to hear about the dub anymore. Let's go football.
No problem, man. We got our own issues. But, yeah, go ahead. Put me in a bad mood by talking about the 49ers.
Yes, I know. We're going from the creme de la creme of the NBA to a team, obviously, in a transitional mode. And that brings me to my first question, Bonte. And that's the fact that clearly, as it's been well documented, you got new leadership for San Francisco, you got a new head coach, and you have a lot of new personnel. Based on what you saw under Chip Kelly to now what you've seen during the course of at least off-season workouts, how much has the culture changed for the San Francisco 49ers?
Oh, it's changed big time, but I think it's more so it doesn't have to do necessarily with Chip Kelly, because I think Chip Kelly came into a situation where it was already toxic, and I don't think Chip Kelly did a bad job at all. It was more so Trent Baalke in the front office. They clean out some of the dead weight in the front office, bring in new blood like John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, guys that are energetic, that are competitive, that want to win. And you hear guys like Joe Staley, who's been with the 49ers forever, talk about, you know what, I feel fresh, I feel reinvigorated. This is the most fun I've had in OTAs in a long, long time. Navarro Bowman seems to have a pep in his step now. So just the fact that they have new blood and cleaned out Trent Baalke, who was the last little toxic waste from the Harbaugh era. We know how that went down. But it was more so Trent Baalke, getting him out of here, just totally cleaned out the whole locker room. And the vibe is right now rocking the San Francisco, believe it or not.
Well, let me ask you this. Do they think that, you know, bring it in veterans like Pierre Garçon, they signed Elvis Dumervil, some guys who have some nice pelts on their belts from years past, but at the same time, you and I both know when you rebuild a team, you really have to do it with youth. So what is their philosophy in terms of trying to reshape the club?
Yeah, well, bringing in the veterans like Garçon, like you mentioned, Pierre Garçon, Elvis Dumervil, don't forget Brian Hoyer, who's basically placeholder. But it's veterans like that who know how to play in the NFL. They're professionals. And that's why you bring in guys like that to help these young guys like Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner. You have Ruben Foster now. You have Solomon Thomas now. Those veterans right there are going to help young guys like that learn how to play the game, learn how to take care of their bodies, learn how to prepare for 16 games a year, to prepare all year long, playing the NFL, so that's what you do there. And the primo young guys along, you know, like last year, through some of the coaching staff right now for San Francisco, they're really pissed off at the way DeForest Buckner was used last year. He played a lot of snaps for a rookie. That's good. Those are good reps for him. Those are good reps for him going forward. However, they're talking about, a lot of the coaching staff saying that, look, we're going to cut some of those reps back. But want him to learn under these veterans, and so that's where you bring in veterans, that's where you bring the young guys in along slowly to help learn from guys like Urson and Bowman and Doomerville and Brian Hoyer and so on and so forth. So I think they're doing it the right way so far in San Francisco.
Well, Bonte, one of the veterans that you just referred to was Brian Hoyer, and you mentioned that right now he's a placeholder, not necessarily the long-term answer. He does have some experience working with Kyle Shanahan, the new head coach. I believe they were together in Cleveland where Shanahan was the offensive coordinator. So how much does Hoyer fit what Shanahan wants to do on offense, even though he's not the long-term answer? And how much of a stride do you think this passing game is going to make, considering, as you well know, I mean, it had a lot to be left to desire in terms of what was produced in 2016?
Yeah, the passing game this last season was rough, man. I didn't recognize half the receivers out on the field. But what Brian Hoyer does and what he did with Kyle Shanahan in Cleveland, we know Brian Hoyer can run some of the boot action that Kyle Shanahan loves to do. Gets your quarterbacks out there on the perimeter. He understands the offense, and he can teach a young guy like Barkley. And look, let's be honest. None of these quarterbacks are going to be a quarterback in the future because of the quarterback class in the NFL draft this past season. It wasn't deemed as a strong class. Next year, it's supposed to be a stronger class with Josh Rosen out of UCLA, or Sam Darnold out of USC.
Right.
Those are just the next couple guys. But Brian Hoyer will bring professionalism. He'll help teach the young guys the system, and more so the receiver core and their running backs. Kyle, look, don't be surprised. I don't want to go off on a tangent here about Carlos Hyde, but I still would not be shocked if he was traded, because ever since, even before he was at Ohio State, Carlos Hyde has not played really in an offense where he's had to line up behind a quarterback that's not in the shotgun formation. You know, it's usually he's playing in the gun, but what Brian Hoyer can do is help him, you know, play in the double tight system, learn the zone read, and so on and so forth. So I don't think, you know, I thought coming into the offseason that Brian Hoyer was a guy that's putting against the target, so I was not shocked when they signed him. And look, we know who Brian Hoyer is. He is who he is. He's really a second string quarterback, but as a placeholder, he can help these guys learn Kyle Shanahan's system. And I think there needs to go a lot worse than having a veteran like that in the system, in this camp, to help these young guys learn the system.
Bonte, I'm going to stay with the quarterback for just a minute here, although I'm going a bit off topic. There was so much talk during the offseason that Kirk Cousins was going to wind up with Shanahan in San Francisco. We know it did not happen. We also know from talking to Larry Michael, the Redskins play-by-play guy, on yesterday's show, that it looks like there's a lot of optimism that Cousins is going to be able to get a long-term deal with the Redskins. Does that specter of him still hang over like a dark cloud in San Fran? Are people still thinking that he's going to wind up there at some point? Is it a distraction? Or, as you just said, there are two really good California college quarterbacks who can't wait to come out in the draft next year. Are people thinking more or less that that's going to be the target for this team?
Yeah, I think a lot of fans and people around the 49ers think that next year's draft is where they're going to find their quarterback. Now, that's always a crapshoot. The Kirk Cousins buzz has really died down, especially, you know, it was happening during the draft, right before the draft. A lot of people thought, even I say, wow, they're really going to go after Kirk Cousins. Really, they're going to give him the keys to the operation. But the 49ers have so much money in the bank, they don't have to go out there and splurge for a quarterback. I think what they realize is, like, look, there's so many holes on that team, from the defensive line to the linebacking core to the secondary to the offensive line, that quarterback really is the last thing you need at this point, believe it or not, because you throw Kirk Cousins in with this offense, he's just going to get drilled play after play after play after play. So really, you're paying a quarterback $23 million just to get beat up. So the noise with Kirk Cousins really died down. I think people have moved off that.
Well, with that being said, as we're talking to Bonte Hill, sports talk show radio host on 95.7 The Game in San Francisco, outlook for the offensive line. You just mentioned that protection was a concern and maybe why that wouldn't make sense to bring in a guy like Kirk Cousins, because any quarterback is only as effective, Bonte, as you know, in terms of the pass protection. The running game was respectable last season, but where does this offensive line lay in terms of what it's going to produce moving forward here entering this season with Brian Hoyer under center?
Yeah, well, bringing Joe Staley back, a veteran, to help these young linemen kind of grow and learn the system is a big move. Trent Brown was okay, but they really have a bunch of no-names. John Diaz is a big guy. They like him a lot. Gary Gilman, he started 41 games over in Western Kentucky over the last 4 years, so he did get playing time. But really, this offensive line is a big, big question mark. Let's just be honest here. Nobody knows anything. Darnell Williams is a question mark. this line is going to have to really grow up quickly, and they're going to hope that Joe Staley can help him. But Joe Staley, solo as a tackle, he didn't have his best season last year. It's really this system with Kyle Shanahan and the zone read is going to really have to flourish with a bunch of no-namers. And that's the biggest question mark, because they really didn't go out there in the offseason in free agency or the draft to really try to bolster this offensive line. I still think it's a project. It is going to be a really weak spot for this team. So I'm really, that's why bringing in Kirk Cousins and having a guy like Brian Hoyer who can run around a little bit is probably best for this team, because this offensive line is really a big-time question mark, and I would not be surprised if they ranked as one of the bottom in the league.
Can I go to the other side now on defense, Bonte? Everybody thought that Solomon Thomas was going to be a top three, top four pick, blue chipper. Love him. Think the Niners did a great job to pick him for sure. But there was also a tremendous amount of buzz in the first round about where is Reuben Foster going to go? How high could he be? Some people thought he might be in the top half of that first round. Other people thought he dropped to the bottom of the first round. There were some questions about injuries, some attitude questions. From what you have been able to ascertain so far during this rookie spring that he has had, what are your quick impressions of Foster? Did he make a good first impression with the organization? Are people still questioning exactly what he's going to bring to the table?
Yeah, the only question with Reuben Foster right now is his shoulder. Is his shoulder going to hold up? That's been the biggest concern so far, but John Lynch is like this guy from day one. Actually, he's loved Reuben Foster from day one. I remember when they drafted and jumped back into the first round on that first day of the NFL draft, people out here went crazy. They thought they were more exuberant over Reuben Foster than they were Solomon Thomas. I mean, seriously, it was wild. I mean, we watched Reuben Foster at Alabama. I mean, he was a sniper. He will hit you. He will lay his body out there on the line. Now, there's some people who, think of these Alabama linebackers and they're not sold on them. Everybody thinks about Rolando McClain. Especially because Rolando McClain was out here in the Bay Area with the Oakland Raiders. So there's a lot of comparisons there. But the 49ers, they haven't questioned his character. They love his motor. They love his passion. And he's been a fan favorite so far, man. They had like this open forum for the fans a couple months ago where Reuben Foster spoke. And he stole the show. He had people laughing, clapping. I mean, people out here love wow. him. So to get him on the field, and you pair him up next to Navarro Bowman, another veteran. You also have Mark Brooks still around. And he brought in Malcolm Smith from the Oakland Raiders, who's played a lot of football with the Seahawks and the Raiders. So he's around the right linebackers. And he just, Navarro Bowman a couple of years ago was probably the best linebacker in football. Him and Luke Kuechly, they were neck and neck.
Yeah.
So to have Reuben Foster learn from Navarro Bowman, learn how to play three downs and learn how to play in the NFL, I mean, the 49ers are ecstatic about this guy.
Well, Bonte, speaking of defense, John Lynch, their new general manager, he had no easy task because he had to try to turn around the defense that was dead last in the NFL last season. And the Giants could somewhat relate to this because 2 years ago, they were also at the bottom of the rankings, and Jerry Reese was very aggressive in the free agent market. They brought in Olivier Vernon. They brought in Damon Harrison, and that really forced the defense to pull a 180. The Niners were limited in terms of their resources. They relied a lot on the draft. So with that being said, what has to happen, Bonte, with this defense? Who has to step up? What has to click in order for this defense to get back to respectability?
Yeah, well, they just need to be healthy. Because by the middle of last season, guys, I mean, this was a minor league football team. This was an expansion team. They just didn't have bodies. I mean, even with Chip Kelly, they would get out to these 14-0 leads. They would get out to fast leads and fast starts. But they just didn't have the depth because they didn't have any bodies. Now they have some bodies, but one guy who I'm looking at was a first-round pick a couple of years ago, and that's Derek Armstead. They need him to step up and man the middle in a big-time way, especially because it seems like they're going to transition over to a 4-3. Now, the secondary still has questions. They're still tinkering with the idea of moving Jimmy Ward to free safety. Eric Reed is still around. They really love this kid, Jaquiski Tartt. He will come up and hit you. He has a high motor. But the secondary will still be a question mark, but I do think they will be a lot better than last season because health is a big key. You know, Aaron Lynch didn't play a lot of games. He was out. Ahmad Brooks was out. Eric Armstead ended up getting hurt and had a shoulder injury. Navarro Bowman, as we know, in that Dallas Cowboys game, he was out for the season. So as long as they stay healthy, they should be respectable, especially in the division with the Seattle Seahawks and L.A. Rams and Arizona Cardinals, where the Cardinals probably have the best offense within the division. But Seahawks and Rams, they're not going to blow you away with anything. They have issues on offense as well. So I think the defense will be a lot better. better than last year, but there are guys who I'm looking at, and Eric Armstead is one of them on the defensive line.
Well, especially a lot of question marks at the quarterback position. We're talking with Bonte Hill, sports talk show host on KGMZ 95.7, the game in San Francisco. And, Bonte, before we let you go, one other follow-up question in terms of the defense. You mentioned they may be changing schemes. I know their new defensive coordinator, and correct me if I'm wrong, former Seahawks assistant, also served under Gus Bradley in Jacksonville. So he seems to have that Seattle philosophy. How much is he bringing that over to San Francisco, and how much do you think the overall philosophy of this defense is going to change because they have a new voice now?
Yeah, Robert Saleh was with Jacksonville, as you mentioned, with Gus Bradley, and, of course, was in the Seattle Seahawks system, especially when they won the Super Bowl against the Denver Broncos. The scheme will just be more man in the zone. We know how Seattle plays the cover one and the cover three. They don't blitz a lot. So I'm guessing that he's not going to blitz, but I wouldn't be surprised because Saleh is a young guy. And I think there's such a transitional period here with San Francisco that I think they will take more chances. You may see more blitzes. You may see more zone blitzes and zone dogs and whatnot. So Seattle runs a lot of nickels, so I think we'll see that. We will see a nickel defense with San Francisco where Reuben Foster and Navarro Bowman are the linebackers because they're better covers guys than Malcolm Smith. Though Malcolm Smith last year went open, he got torched by the tight end all season long. So I think the scheme, 4-3-3-4, they're both hybrids. And let's be honest, with the 3-4, it's just basically about the outside linebacker standing up in a two-point stance as opposed to putting his hand in the dirt and rushing a passer. So I'm not sure exactly how much they'll tweak things, but I do expect a new change in the league because the 49ers have been predominantly over the last 7, 8, 9 years, especially when it started with Mike Nolan, a 3-14. But I do think they want to transition more to a 4-3, which is why they drafted Solomon Thomas to go in the middle there, because they really think he can rush off the end to go alongside Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in terms of blitzing and zones and man defense, because let's be honest, Dante Jones out of North Carolina State was a third-round pick. He's had his rough bumps. Rashard Robinson at corners. If you want to run that really Seattle defense, the Jacksonville defense, think about it. Seattle had Richard Sherman and whoever you put on the other side, it didn't matter because you had Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor in Jacksonville. You got Jalen Ramsey, one of the best corners out there in football, only in the second year. So they don't have really a cornerback who can just go out there and play on the island all day long. So I do think they'll run a lot more zone early on until they can have another draft and another offseason to where they can bring in a stud at corner and safety.
I got one more for you, Bonte. And by the way, just a heads up, Robbie Gould, the kicker who you guys signed off the Giants this year as a free agent, the guy's a pro's pro. You're going to love talking to him. He's a heck of a kicker, too. And I certainly invite you to cozy up to his locker because he's a cool guy. But I want to ask you about a free agent that the Niners signed, a safety named Lorenzo Jerome from St. Francis of Pennsylvania, who came out of nowhere, FCS football, and in the All-Star games had, I think, 4 interceptions over 2 games and wound up getting picked up by the Niners. And from what I heard, the Giants were actually interested in signing him as a free agent. He wound up going to San Francisco. Has he shown any flashes here in the spring?
There hasn't been a lot of noise about him. But I think it's because John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan love to keep things tight-lipped. There was this practice squad running back who really lit it up, and somebody reported it, and Kyle Shanahan, he just went nuts. He brought all of the assistant coaches into a room and said, "Guys, you got to stop talking to the press." So they're keeping things under wraps. And we know with Mike Shanahan, remember Mike Shanahan when he was in Denver, he was known for having these undrafted guys coming out of nowhere and play. But when I hear about this kid out of St. Francis of Pennsylvania, John Lynch, I heard one thing about him. It's funny you mentioned him up. You mentioned him because I heard one thing about him. And I was like, man, this kid runs around. He might be a special teamer. He may make the roster. Look out for this guy. So it's funny you mention that up because he seems like a John Lynch type of guy. And with this 49ers team that is such a transition and all the holes they have, I would not be surprised if he made the roster. Another guy to look out for is out of Utah, Joe Williams. Remember Joe Williams out of Utah? He was looking huge last year.
Sure.
He retired in the middle of the year. He had a bunch of problems. I believe he went to Utah for a while, went to the JC. They really love Joe Williams right now. And that's why I mentioned earlier that it would not shock me to see Carlos Hyde at least. He may ride out this season, but I don't see Carlos Hyde being here for the long term.
Bonte Hill, sports talk show host on KGMZ 95.7. The Game in San Francisco, kind enough to give us a few minutes to provide what to expect from the Niners this coming season. Bonte, we'll let you get back to breaking down Durant's new contract and Andre Iguodala's whereabouts in the offseason, right?
You guys got me freaking up about week 10. I don't want to think about Brandon Marshall, Odell Beckham Jr., Sterling Shepard right now, Evan Ingram. Are you guys crazy? I don't want those problems right
just,
now.
Just do me one favor, okay? By the time we get out there, it's going to be cold here in November. Give us some sunshine, would you please?
I will. I'll tell the weather guy out here to hook you guys up, man.
All right, Bonte. We appreciate the time. Good talking with you. Bonte Hill.
Have a good one, guys.
You got it. Sports talk show host on KGMZ 95.7, The Game in San Francisco. So a very young Niners team that the Giants are going to see this season. They have plenty of question marks, but it does seem as if John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have the team headed in the right direction. And I'm sure that the team, as we've talked about, is going to look very differently in Week 10 compared to what it will look like in the first early stages of the season.
Yeah, and perhaps, that's why from the Giants' perspective, in a team with transition in a team in transition, I should say, it's sometimes better to get them later when you have a better idea of what you're looking at. Because in the first probably 6, 7, 8 games of the year, they may be changing stuff up almost on a weekly basis, just trying to find out who they are.
Experimentation a little. But you could also argue, Paul, that it's better to face them then because they sort of don't have any continuity versus when you see them in Week 10, they'll probably have solidified roles and what they exactly want to do.
It's always a hit or miss kind of thing, heads or tails. There's a plus and a minus all the time. See, the reason that I think in this particular situation it could be a plus is because unlike, let's say, Dallas, which is going to be replacing a lot of their defense, they pretty much know who they're going to plug in there. They just don't know what they have in terms of can those guys execute what they want them to do. They know who they're going to play. San Francisco probably doesn't even know who's going to get the bulk of their reps.
Well, especially since it's a young team.
That makes it, for me, that makes their situation more fluid and more liquid than, let's say, the Cowboys would. So I'd rather play a Cowboy team in that situation earlier and a Niner team in their situation later just because of there's more fluidity. That's the reason. But agreed, anytime you're playing a team, especially a team that defensively is in a total rebuild mode, you have to take advantage of that. You have to believe in your mind you're going to go in there and you will take advantage of every mistake they make and put that into your pot of gold.
201-939-4513, that is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. We're continuing to preview the 2017 schedule for the Giants. We'll also get into some off-season chatter, what to expect for training camp. It's all up for debate, all up for conversation. Let's open up the phone lines. Kevin is in New York City. Kevin, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, hear you loud and clear.
How you guys doing? Hey, so I just have a couple questions and a quick point. I want to start by saying, you know, the Giants last year were 7-1 at home last year. And quite frankly, they should have been 8-0. But unfortunately, we lost that game thanks to the late turnover against the Redskins in Week 3. But my question is, why were the Giants such a good home game – or, excuse me, a home team last year compared to previous years when they weren't?
Well, if you go back to 2015, I mean, forget what happened even beyond that. I'll tell you the biggest difference is – they closed out the close games at home in 2016. They were not doing that, if you recall, in 2015. Think about how many close games the Giants played, Kevin, at home in 2015. I remember we were talking about it on a weekly basis. It came down to the last drive, and would you get a defensive stop? Would you get a turnover? And you look at a lot of those results, they weren't able to close the door. So that, to me, is the biggest difference between 15 and 16.
You could always make the argument, and I'm not going to make it because I don't know that there's a lot to it, but that when your defense is in a position to lock down a game, you're better off doing it at home because you have the crowd, the momentum, the emotion. You'd like to believe that the sound in the building, as it's getting louder and louder, trying to spur your defense on, it causes some issues for the offensive line and the quarterback with their signals as they're trying to come back in the final couple minutes of a game. Some people would like to put a lot of stock in that. I don't know that I do. Okay, but certainly you could put that out there as a factor. I think it was probably more coincidental than anything. I just think the Giants were a much better team across the board, and that's why they won more games. I don't necessarily know that it had to do with the home turf, as compared to the road turf. We all know that when they won their Super Bowls, they were a better road team.
Yeah, usually they had struggled at home, and they thrived on the road. That's been a big part of the trend for the Giants in recent years. But I think if you just look at the big difference between 15 and 16, if you just want to use that as a sample size, and I'm bringing up 2015 schedule, they lost to the Falcons at home 24-20. That's a four-point game. They lost to the Patriots 27-26. That's a one-point game. They lost to the Jets in overtime by 3, 23-20. That's a three-point game. They lost to Carolina after going down big by 3, 38-35. And then they lost to the Eagles 35-30. So I named, about five games decided by 5 points or less. And then you flip the script to 2016. They won all those close games. So that was the biggest difference. But it just happened to fall at home as opposed to maybe on the road.
And let's make something very clear, too. The home field advantage that the Giants had in the old Giants Stadium because of the weather conditions. The wind, which was notorious in that building, swirled and caused trouble not only for the kickers and the returners, but for the quarterbacks, even who wanted to throw 30, 40-yard passes downfield. Even sometimes a 15-yard out was a difficult thing for visiting quarterbacks to deal with. That's not as important in this building. Okay, the wind patterns are not nearly as vicious as they were in the old Giants Stadium, and that cut down on some of their home field advantage, to be quite frank with you. Right. And yet they were still 7 out of 8 last year.
Right, and a couple more quick questions real quick. One is, obviously now with the addition of, Brandon Marshall and Evan Engram, now that we have, better weapons than we did last year on offense, do you think we will throw the ball more than we did last year, or should we expect, more of a 50-50 balance between the run game and the passing game? What do you guys think about that?
I'd like to see more balance, but that's me.
Well, I would like to see more balance, too. I mean, I don't know if ideally you can expect it to be 50-50. I think the way this league is built that
that's not going to happen.
You're going to tend to pass more than you throw.
Right.
But,
but
your point, Kevin, about you're looking at the personnel, Marshall, Shepard's growth, Odell Beckham, Engram, you got so many weapons.
Right.
Wouldn't you just utilize all of them and work your strengths? And I agree with you, but at the same time, the Giants also want to see that running game continue to progress, and you also don't want to be a sole dimensional team where you're just throwing the ball. You become a little bit more predictable.
You can't throw the ball every down. Exactly. Yeah.
So I think that even, let's say, when the percentages play out and maybe the season wraps up and it's 60-40, let's say pass in favor of run, while that's fine and you can still win with that breakdown, you want that 40% though of you running the football to be much more productive than it's been in the last few seasons. So that needs to take a step forward.
Look at it this way. In each of the last 4 years, Eli Manning has thrown the ball a minimum of 550 times. In fact, in 14 and 15, he threw it over 600 times. That should not happen. Yeah. If the Giants are going to be Super Bowl contenders, I would say to you, he should probably throw the ball about 530 times.
Okay.
That would be
final thing before I go. When you look at the schedule, especially, the first three games of the season, we got week one in Dallas, home opener against the Lions, and then week three in Philly. The Giants have a chance, I believe, to win all three of those games. And if they do, I mean, that's just a tremendous confidence booster. You can win two division games early on and interconference game. I mean, that's, you can't get better than that. And, the Giants do have a tough schedule this year compared to last year. But I believe with the roster that we have, I expect to win not every game, but I expect us to compete.
Well, I think that's the goal every single year, Kevin, and appreciate the phone call. And the goal also has to be that you have to take care of business against your divisional rivals.
No doubt.
It doesn't really matter whether the games are early in the season or late in the season. You have to find a way to win those games. I mean, we've talked about the trends on this program. 3-3 is not going to cut it. You're not going to win the division with a 500 record. You have to get to at least 4-2. That's what they're going to have to strive for. So whether the games are early or late, you have to wrap up those games.
Well, I will say this. You talk about week one and week three on the road in Dallas and then in Philadelphia. So your first two division games are on the road, and they're coming immediately in September. So there's certainly no excuses or no margin for error to sleepwalk at the beginning of the season. They better come out of the gate running. Because if you can get those two division games on the road and be 2-0 in the division and both being away games, that really sets you up now to be able to do what you want to do in the East.
Knowing later in the season those two teams are going to visit you, and like you said, you have a tough task on the road early in the season.
Get it out of the way.
Yeah, I think it's huge. I think the opportunity is there early in the season based on what the last phone call was alluding to. I don't know necessarily if I would say, though, that, you know, it's a golden red carpet treatment type of situation for the Giants. They could certainly capitalize early, but I don't think that's an easy task. I mean, those are tough opponents, whether or not they're up and down on the defensive end. Divisional games, and we've seen this every single year, there's not a lot of separation in those games. They seem to find a way to come down to the wire.
No, I do think, though, that it would be a tremendous advantage for the Giants to be able to stick two wins on the road in the division in their pockets, and then play out the rest of the schedule, because this division is going to be a rough house battle. And I don't care how many of us think the Giants are the favorites, this is not going to be a walk in the park. It's not. There's just no way that's going to happen.
One other thing I wanted to throw out before we get back to more of your phone calls. So the Giants ran the ball 398 times as a team last season.
Okay.
That was tied for 22nd in the NFL, just to at least understand where they were. That's not run-to-pass ratio. It's just they ranked 22nd in terms of total rushing attempts last season. I think you want to try to strive to being more middle of the pack when you look at the end of the season numbers.
Sure.
So there is room for them to run the football much more this coming season, just in terms of maybe what we can anticipate. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We've got Christian in New York. Christian, what's happening?
Hey, guys, I called yesterday about my concerns with Odell catching the ball in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
I should have been more specific, because the quick slants, he's catching the ball either right out of the break or after a few steps out of the break, that's pretty safe. I mean, he sees everything ahead of him having the ball in his hands already at that point. But what I didn't like is when he's settling down in a zone in the middle of the field when it's not even for first down yardage. And then you see a couple of guys dragging him down. You know, he's got linebackers coming downhill on him. And a lot of those slants that he scored on last year, you know, he'd catch it right out of his break, and he would just blaze through the middle of the field, and he'd have safeties diving at his feet. Where, you know, a lot of the other passes, it was linebackers dragging him down. And that was more of what I was referring to, was Brandon Marshall taking over that kind of dirty work in the pass game.
Well, and, England, you know, might
Marshall
be able to do some
of
that, too.
Break a lot of those.
Well, and quite honestly, even Shane Vereen can help out with some of the throws that you're talking about. I don't think there's any question. When you look at Odell Beckham and his ability to accelerate and then get the yards after the catch, and also the way he has jukeability and finds open holes in a defense when he's got the ball in his hands, the last thing you really want to do is to be having him run a pass route where he's either going to be coming back to the quarterback or he's going to be having to stop and then start up again. That does not maximize his best traits. So if that's what you're referring to, and I think you are, absolutely, nobody would disagree with you.
You want to hit him in stride because of his speed and how well he is in the open
and
field.
And not just in stride, but if you can, make sure he's angling vertical, whether it be on that short slant or he's just going downhill. You know, if he's running a straight horizontal in stride, all right, that's okay, I guess. But the bottom line is you want his momentum going downwards. I'm using a running back term, downhill, but you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly, yep.
Get him upfield. That's where his momentum is best suited to burn the opposition.
Definitely, because those slants are a really important part of the game. But also, when it comes to running the ball this year, if they try it out in a true power approach, and it's looking a lot like last year, I'd like to see some four wides there on the goal line and then running the ball. And, you know, you basically just spread the defense right out because they're not going to ignore those kinds of goal line. And you're talking about, you know, your five linemen against, you know, the D-line and maybe one linebacker at that point instead of trying to play some true power down there.
You know what's funny? I got to interrupt you for 1 second because Brandon London, who has been part of our broadcast team for the last year, he loves to run out of a spread formation. You know, and he busts my horns all the time for being old school. And he's like, no, you gotta run out of the spread formation. Just spread them out. Okay, the one problem with that is if your guys, and I know technically you're supposed to have an advantage in that regard because there's supposed to be more room for the running back to run, but schematically, if your guys fan or whiff on the block up front, you lose. It's just that simple. You must have complete and total confidence that your guys will not whiff on those blocks. Because if they do whiff, okay, and if in that spread the other team has quick defensive players who are playing up tight on the line, trust me, they will shoot through space and they will nail your ball carrier for a two-yard loss. So I get it. I get the theory behind it. But you have to make sure that you can execute it properly, or it's not a good thing. It used to work, as you remember, with Ahmad Bradshaw. The Giants would run a lot of times, spread formation, and then give it to Bradshaw.
And he'd find the holes.
And he would find the holes. But that also meant somebody was doing their job, making sure they got the chip or the block to allow that hole to remain open. If your offensive linemen whiff, that hole closes quicker than you can say pancake.
And, yeah, and I prefer the two tight end set. And if we can really get teams used to us running a two tight end set, then that just creates an even better matchup for Ingram, because that's another linebacker that's covering him if we're actually having success out of that formation.
Well, and I think that's something that they're certainly going to experiment with, and appreciate the phone call. But, you know, I'm anxious to see, Christian, what they do with Red Ellison. I mean, that to me is an X factor.
Well, he said double tight end.
Yeah, no.
Which means Ellison's in there.
Well, but I'm saying that. Is he going to be, though, out of a fullback formation? Is he going to be utilized as a tight end? You know, how are they going to line him up? I get the fact that you're going to have two tight ends on the field, but that doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to be in the tight end positions. They could move them around. So how they utilize him, I think, could tell a lot about the effectiveness of red zone plays.
And you know what else is going to tell a lot about the effectiveness of everything the Giants do in the passing game? If they're able to establish some type of respect with their running game first, that will make everything that you guys are talking about with your formations, your schemes, how you want to use Marshall, how you want to use Ingram, everything that you're talking about opens up immensely if you get the defensive coordinator's respect that, guess what, we can run the ball. If you can't run the ball, like the Giants haven't been able to consistently do for several years, guess what? All of the schematics that you want to try on offense and all of the skill positions that the Giants have compiled on the offensive side of their roster are not going to be nearly as effective as you want them to be.
And we talked about this all of last season. I mean, I think you hit on a very key point, Paul. You know, before we get embedded into, you know, how they're going to run things in the red zone, should they spread the guys out, what about outside of the red zone? How effective are the Giants running the football to tell the opposing teams, specifically the defensive coordinators, bring your safeties up a little bit? Bring your safeties up so that now all of a sudden Beckham, Marshall, Ingram, and all of these other players maybe have a little bit more room and flexibility to work. Because a lot of times last season, Paul, there was no reason for the safeties to come up. Let's be honest. Defensive coordinators were like, you want to run the football? Run the football. We're relying on the four guys up front. They'll be able to take care of business. We're not going to worry about blitzing you so much because we're just going to focus on making sure Beckham doesn't beat us. Now, if you beat us with the running game, now all of a sudden that brings the defensive personnel up a bit.
And this is part of the reason why the critics of Eli Manning just make me very, very angry. Because every defensive coordinator went into the Giants game saying, we're not going to let Eli Manning and Odell Beckham beat us. And what the Giants do, they won 11 games and went to the playoffs with virtually no running game whatsoever. They could not command the respect of defensive coordinators with their lackluster running game. And yet, Eli still did what he did. Odell still did what he did. And the Giants were a contending team. That passing game was climbing uphill all season.
I think it also speaks volumes of what the Giants' defense did.
Because no question.
If you don't have balance on offense, and like you said, you're still relying on your deep ball, and that's not necessarily always clicking, it helps when your defense is giving up less than 20 points a game. Because you're not
more
asking
than
the
helps.
Offense
more than
to
helps.
Do much.
It becomes a requirement.
Yeah.
because the way this offense played, had the defense of 2 years ago been on the field, they would have had trouble being a 500 team.
Of course.
Let's not kid ourselves. We saw what happened in 2015 when the defense was not nearly as accomplished. But it should not take anything away from the fact that Eli still was able to function at a good enough level. And so Odell, again, another super all-pro type season when everybody kept saying, well, it's, you know, Odell's been around now. Everybody's seen him. How could he possibly get better? How could he possibly match the numbers that he put up the first 2 years? And you know what? He keeps doing it. Even though 80,000 people in the building know he's getting the ball.
Well, and that's why when you have a dynamic player on one side of the ball who, no matter the defense, no matter the offense, can, in the blink of an eye, turn the tables in a game, you know, that's a special player. And yeah. I think Beckham's proved that over the first three seasons. Let's head back to the lines. We got Terrence in Pennsylvania. Terrence, what do you got for us?
Hey, how's it going, guys? I just wanted to talk to you about the all the off-season acquisitions, some of the signings and everything. I think Jerry Reese did a great job this year. Everyone's concerned about the offensive line. I don't have any concerns at all. I think these guys put in some work. And with all that talent out there, man, they're going to be fine. I know Paul is worried about the power running game. I think we'll be fine in the run game as well. You call me a homer, guys. I just wanted to put that out there.
You have to understand, Terrence, you know, Paul has sleepless nights during the season and the offseason on a variety of topics. So, you know, this man is in uncharted territory. Don't even put yourself in that same ballpark, and you don't have to label yourself. No matter what you say or no matter what you sell or no matter your concerns, he will find something else to irritate him and
coach's
keep him up late at night.
Coach's mentality. So,
yes.
I can't help myself. I adopt
a
coach's mentality.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, that's great. And
yeah.
I will tell you this. I do believe there is a lot, and I mean this wholeheartedly, there is a lot of optimism about the Giants' improvement on the offensive line, and therefore you would think in the running game. You would think until it happens and they get the pads on and they do it, we don't know
exactly.
That. But I understand why you feel better about it. I think there's a lot of evidence that indicates it will be better, but you got to see it.
Yeah, and, you know, putting in those offensive weapons, you know, I love Victor Cruz, but I just don't think he could put enough pressure on defenses to open up the run game. I think these guys getting better on the line, bringing in Brandon Marshall, the tight end that they brought in.
Yeah, but see, I disagree with you, and I have to stop you there because I think the Giants' passing game, even though that looks to be improved as well, I think teams right now will continue to go into the Giant game saying, we need to contain Odell, we need to worry about Eli, and they're still not going to think about the Giants' running game until they see it. Because defensive coordinators are going to be just like every other member of the media and every other fan out there, and they're going to say, show me. Show me you can run the ball before we even think about trying to alter our defensive balance and then trying to stop everything that the Giants have. And I can't blame them for that. Why would they? Why would
you
expect
them? I like to gamble. I'm going to bet on our guys, and I'm going to say we're going to be able to punish some teams. I got us undefeated, fellas. Got us undefeated.
Boy, that's great.
That's quite a prediction.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's great.
Guys. First undefeated.
Okay.
All right, Terrence.
No, thank you, guys.
You got it.
Thank you again, guys.
Appreciate the phone call. And listen, we've been talking about the hopeful improvement of the running game for the last few seasons, Paul. I mean, this is not necessarily a new storyline based on perhaps guys working out in the offseason, having that translate once they put on pads. But, I mean, I would agree with you. Talk is cheap at the end of the day. It's the old cliche. We're still going to have to see it. I mean, is there new personnel in play? Is there a little bit more competition? Is there more depth on the offensive line? I would agree with all of those takes. I think those are all valid statements. But we then have to now see it. We've talked about it. We've talked about this guy may play here, this guy may play there. But at the end of the day, you got to see it first.
The only thing I would say, Lance, is that this offseason there are more facts in place that make you believe that could happen than there have been in the previous four or five seasons. We did not see as much depth on the O-line as we see this year.
I would agree with you there.
We did not see the same effort in the offseason expelled by or expended by, is that the word I'm looking for? Expelled, expended?
Yeah.
By the same guys as much as they have this year. We're talking about Hart and Flowers, who have dramatically picked up their offseason preparation. We think the Giants have a very young but talented running back core that looks to be fairly deep. So these factors are better than they have been in years past. So in years past, in fact, quite frankly, I think you guys remember, in the last 4 or 5 years, every offseason, I keep asking for it, and it doesn't happen. I've never expressed this type of confidence in the running game. It's been a long time since I've, in fact, probably since Brandon Jacobs retired, since I expressed much confidence in the Giants running game.
I want to head to Twitter, and then we'll get back to the lines at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat. At AJ Marshall 3, secondary will be better in year two with the emergence of Eli Apple and healthy defensive tackles, he argues. You think they will rank in the top five, his question is. I guess you're referring to overall, will the defense rank in the top five?
Why not?
Yeah. Based on last season's finish, I don't think it's a stretch to say that they can get back there. But I would agree that I think a lot of it will depend on guys staying healthy. That goes without saying. And then also some of those young players who flashed a little bit last season, Paul, or some of the players returning from injury, picking up where essentially they left off. Is Darian Thompson going to not necessarily pick up where he left off as a Giant, but maybe show some of those flashes we saw when he was in college at Boise State, where he was that opportunistic ball hawk type of player? Will Eli Apple continue to get more and more comfortable? Is Dalvin Tomlinson going to carve out a role? You know, or will Robert Thomas and Jay Bromley be players that take advantage of their opportunities? Will B.J. Goodson take a step forward as the middle linebacker? So, you know, there's still a lot of question marks with respect to some of these young defensive players.
We talked during one of our earlier web tapings that we had to do about, you know, what would be the one stat, and I guess I'm giving it away, but you guys will see it in a couple of weeks, that the defense could improve on this year or that they would want to improve on this year. And I think when you look at the Giants' number, you say to yourself, okay, they had 25 takeaways last season. And that would have put them 2, 4, 6, 8, 10,
still
12.
Respectable.
Right in the middle of the pack.
Yeah.
Okay, in the middle of the pack. And yet they were number 2 in fewest points allowed. Now, could you imagine if they could get that turnover number up and they could acquire even more takeaways, specifically some more interceptions, which you'd like to see Darian Thompson be a part of? You just mentioned him a moment ago. Well, think about how much better could this defense be, at the very least, stay the same, top five for sure, but maybe even become the best if they could somehow improve the takeaway ratio.
Well, and then the also problem with that is the fact that last season they had 27 giveaways, so you were minus 2 in terms of turnover differential. Not only would you like to see the takeaways
go up.
Well,
that's why I said ratio.
Yeah, no, but you'd also want to see the offense protect the football better as well.
Ratio, taking away more and giving away less.
Yeah.
Because there were still times where this offense did not put the defense in a great spot.
And we did shoot that earlier, and you'll eventually see it. We're going to do our feature 30 questions in 30 days. We're going to start to go over some storylines to watch in training camp of the upcoming season. And one of the things that I threw out, because I was looking also at the defensive numbers a bit closely, and they did give up some big passing plays last season.
Yeah.
As good as the defense was, 59 pass plays of 20 or more yards, that was the second most, tied for the second most in the NFL. So that, I think, is an area that you want to clean up.
Sure.
And this is an area that I think fans are used to talking about, and there were some glimpses of these struggles again, is, you know, making sure that the tight end, the opposing tight end, doesn't come back to bite you. And while the numbers I don't think were as maybe bad as they were perhaps in previous seasons, there were still games where Jason Witten did his fair share of damage. Mm-hmm. Granted, Witten's doing damage against most teams in the NFL. Ladarius Green, when he came back from injury in that Steelers game, he had a lot of big plays down the field. And you look at top to bottom for a lot of the tight ends, Jordan Reed. But the reason I'm bringing it up, Paul, it's not so much about what happens during the course of the season. It's the fact that the division, the NFC East, has a lot of challenging tight ends. And that's the area that you need to focus in on. You have to be able to slow down the teams that you're going to play two times a year. So you're going to see Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis, Paul. You're going to see those guys twice a year. You're going to see Jason Witten twice a year. And then let's not lose and overlook on the Eagles. Zach Ertz is a very productive tight end, even though they still have a young quarterback. He also had a very big game against the Giants. All three teams in the NFC East have productive game-changing tight ends. It's an area that has to be a focus on for the defense entering this season.
I would agree with that. And, you know, obviously you got to get some mobility at linebacker, which the Giants did by getting Keenan Robinson last year. And it dramatically improved because of him over the previous several seasons. And, you know, to get him back was a big thing, I thought, for this defense. And, you know, does Darian Thompson become part of that equation too? I mean, we keep thinking that, okay, he's the free safety. He's the deep guy. And he's going to be an interception machine based on what he did at Boise State. Well, that's all well and good. But let's not forget, you're talking about the Giants giving up big plays. If he's the center fielder, he should be able to prevent a lot of those big plays, even if he's not picking it off. The fact that he's
just
there,
be in position. Yeah.
That could do a lot to prevent big plays. And if you're talking about tight ends who may be getting behind those linebackers, well, you'd like to think that Darian Thompson now, with his speed and his ability to cover center field, would be able to help out. Maybe in a bracket coverage, he could be an over-the-top guy.
Yeah.
If the corners are so good that they can cover man, well, now your safeties, Landon Collins likes to come up in the box a lot. Now maybe Thompson helps out covering one of those wicked tight ends who likes to put up big numbers.
Well, and also Landon Collins' improvement in pass coverage as
no
well.
Question.
I mean, that's another area. Spags talked about this, that they're working on the play action, that Collins shouldn't be fooled by that. That's an area that they want to see him make strides. So continued improvement from Landon Collins in coverage. Your point about Darian Thompson being healthy and helping on the field, because I always say passes defense sometimes are just as good as interceptions. You're making sure that the ball's dropped on the ground and it's not a completion.
On
take
third
that.
Down, a yes. Pass defense is as good as a turnover.
Exactly. 201-939-4513. And I think what we just answered should hopefully address the question on Twitter from Derek at GmenBigBlue427. He was saying, where do you see the Giants defense making the biggest stride in terms of production? Well, I think those are areas that we just talked about that would certainly address that question. Let's head back to the phone lines, and we want to hear from Nick in the Meadowlands. Nick, what's happening? How are we doing,
hey,
Nick?
What's up, Colin?
Hello.
What's going on?
How are we today?
Doing all right. How's things with you? What do you have for us?
Good. A few things, but yesterday, what you guys were talking about with the Herschel Walker trade, I just wanted to talk about that. That was great, man. You know, you guys had a lot of good points there. You imagine that? You know, that's got to be the best ever, right? The best trade ever.
Oh, I don't think
you said you watched that, right? That 30 for 30.
I don't think there's any question. That was the most lopsided trade in the history of pro football. And you know what? Again, when the Saints traded their entire draft for Ricky Williams,
that was stupid.
Now, that didn't necessarily turn out as lopsided in retrospect as the Cowboy deal did, but that was also an incredibly lopsided deal.
Well, Herschel Walker only played for them for, what, a couple, three seasons, I think. You know what I mean?
And then the
funny thing is he ended up back with the Cowboys.
Later on, he did.
You know, yep. Later on. But what did they get? They got, like, three first-round picks, three second-round picks.
They got like 11 players for Herschel, right?
Let's see. Jimmy Johnson said it, and I think he said,
what do we have? And he's like, we don't have anything. We got one player.
Eight picks, and look what they got for that guy.
I mean, they got eight. So they got 13 plus items.
It doesn't matter how many picks you have. It's who you pick with the picks.
Of course. I think you can say that about any.
And like Russell Maryland, they got Darren Woodson. Emmitt Smith. I mean,
he got everybody he wanted and traded some of, like what the Browns did this last draft.
Traded some of them to get back into the first round.
It is sickening. Sickening how the Vikings built that Cowboys mini dynasty.
I can't believe they did that.
Absolutely.
You know? And the other day, Paul, you were talking, it's just going off the beaten path a little bit, the Mayweather and McGregor thing.
How did that come up? Jeez.
It's three 5-minute rounds, and championship fights are 5 5-minute rounds, so that would be 25 minutes. So I don't think necessarily the guy can't, you know, go the distance. I mean, when you're down on the ground wrestling and all that, if any of you guys have ever wrestled, it takes a lot of energy out of you. So I don't think that's the case. The whole case is the mismatch. The next fight, why don't they have 50-year-old Tyson fight Mayweather?
I don't know about that.
You know?
It'll be an entertainment attraction, I'll tell you that. How did that come up? Paul, do you remember?
They were talking about it the other day, and I just thought I would say something because, you know, I loved boxing growing up. I'm almost 40 years old, and I I think I saw the last of the great heavyweights, you know, the 70s. You know, I didn't get to see them, but those were the great era. And then you have the, you know, when I grew up in the 80s and 90s, you had great heavyweights. But Floyd Mayweather ruined boxing. So I just wanted to bring that up with that fight. This is what you get with his fights. I wouldn't pay for any of that ever. You know?
Different style boxer, as most guys are. You know, he's not a guy that engages so
much.
Not
very entertaining.
Well, I agree with you in terms of the entertainment factor. But you know what? If it's effective and you win bouts, the guys are still going
to because he breaks his hands all the time when he tries to knock people out. He doesn't have the power when he moved up in weight, so he had to start using that defensive skill. And, you know, nobody wants to see that. It reminds me of Winky Wright. You remember Winky Wright?
Yes, I do.
Real show fighter, you know. But anyway, you guys have a good day.
Thank
we'll
you.
Talk to you.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for
later, guys.
Weighing in. You got it.
I'm not sure. I remember we had
you that.
Quick,
that? Okay.
We had a quick conversation about it, and I think I was telling John I would not plunk down 1 cent for the pay per view for that fight. Not 1 cent. And I'm a boxing guy. And by the way, the 70s, the golden era of the heavyweights, loved it. Loved it. Whether it was Frazier, Norton, Foreman, Quarry, Jimmy Ellis, Ron Lyle. Oh, my goodness. Great
glory
great,
days.
Great glory days. Absolutely. With a capital G. And I didn't even mention Ali.
All right. Let's head back to Twitter here as we try to return back to Giants land. Will at SpainMan1991. He agrees that the D needs to improve on covering tight ends. He brings up the point he's hoping that Evan Engram will help out big in practice every day to prepare the defense to go up against tight ends. And that's certainly a fair, valid point. You get an athletic, versatile tight end that you go up against. You hope that prepares you for what you're going to see personnel-wise in the division as well as outside of the division.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. There's certainly going to be snaps where he's going up against the number one defense during the course of the week. And, yeah, that's not a bad look. I mean, heck, you know, we've been telling you, and I know in particular while everybody else is talking about Jordan Reed, I'm telling you, he's JerMichael Finley. That's who Evan Engram is. And there's nothing wrong with having your defense go up against a guy like that.
Yeah, because, I mean, remember, you're then going to put pressure on the opposing teams, Paul. I mean, you were talking about having Darian Thompson to help linebackers. You know, they're going to have personnel, too, to try to slow down Engram. You got to look at it on the flip side as well. Defense is right now in the NFC East specifically, since they're going to have to play the Giants 2 times. You know, they're right now trying to think, okay, what's our best matchups in terms of what the Giants are going to present with respect to the receiving core, as well as now their newest tight end?
The best matchup for me, if you're a team in the NFC East, and especially as we've said, the defenses are not as good as the Giants in the division, to me, their best philosophy is probably just test the offensive line. Just say, you know what? Until the Giants prove they can run the ball, just say, okay, you know what? We are just going to send extra pressure. We're going to send, because we can't cover all those weapons one-on-one, all right? So that's not a good idea. We know we don't have to respect the run right now because the Giants haven't proven they can run the ball. And you know what? We think that if we send 5, 6, 7 guys, we keep sending extra guys, we think we can beat their offensive line and get home. So to me, right now, going into the season, until the Giants prove otherwise that A, they can pass protect and pick up the blitz, and B, they can run the ball effectively, I would just start throwing the kitchen sink at him if I was the other team's defensive coordinator.
Well, I don't disagree with you there, but if you were to ask me which player on every team is critical, if their goal is we've got to find a way to slow down the tight end, with the Giants, you're going to throw out Keenan Robinson, and then I think Darian Thompson is worthy of entering the conversation. Mm-hmm. Dallas, I would throw out Sean Lee. I think he's by far their most versatile player at the linebacker position that you'd feel comfortable putting on a tight end. With the Redskins, you know, this is a bit of a wild card because he's still a little unproven, but I'm going to throw out the name Sua Cravens, who was a linebacker slash safety in college who they're moving around. Mm-hmm. He's versatile enough that I think that's the guy that they would turn to. And then when you look at Philadelphia, you know, the Eagles right now, they're sort of experimenting with their personnel. But if you go to the linebacker position, probably Jordan Hicks is the guy that comes to mind, who's also had to deal with some injuries over the course of his early
season. Now, interesting you mentioned this because, remember, going back when Parcells was coaching the Cowboys, he was the first one who decided, you know what, we can't cover Shockey with a linebacker. So he would just say, forget about it. We're sticking a DB on him. And he put a corner on Shockey.
And we've seen that happen. But the problem is, you know, you put even your slot corner who you think has speed.
Well, can't be a slot guy because he's too
height,
big.
Yeah, you're at a height disadvantage with respect to that.
And maybe a little muscle disadvantage,
correct,
too. It's got to be somebody who's solid, which is why if you're lucky enough that you've got a very athletic safety,
correct,
that you can put on him, you can do that. So that's one way to combat this, is you put a DB on the tight end. But again, it still comes down to if you don't run the ball well, you're giving the defense the option of doing that. If you can prove that you can run the ball, they're less likely to put a DB on your tight end.
Yeah, because they're going to need the DB for other types of assignments.
It all goes back to proving you can run the ball.
Yeah. Well, it will be interesting, though, regardless of how effective or the lack thereof the Giants are with respect to the running game, who becomes that key defensive player for all four divisional teams. And, you know, you mentioned safety, so then I would say that Philly probably is going to turn to Malcolm Jenkins. He's one of their most versatile guys in terms of the secondary at the safety position, and then Dallas could turn to Byron Jones. So, you know, those are the other type of players that come to mind.
Good news for the Giants is that their defensive front is so stout against the run that it doesn't matter. They can afford, if they want to go to a nickel package and to go to perhaps a DB on a tight end, because the rest of their defense is so stout against the run that they can still hold the water that they have to against the running game. They're not necessarily giving much up if they wind up playing the passing tight end or, quote, the receiving tight end differently.
Whereas the other teams,
can't.
It's more of a give and take. Well, if we take this personnel off the field,
that's
are we
it.
Now as effective in stopping the run?
They're robbing Peter to pay Paul, and they're opening themselves up to a risk.
Yeah, and that's going to be something interesting to watch throughout the course of the season. Well, that's going to wrap up Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We thank Bonte Hill for joining us off the top from 97.5 The Game in San Francisco. He went over what to expect from the San Francisco 49ers. We'll continue to preview all of the opponents in the upcoming season each and every day here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, and you can stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest news.
Tomorrow it is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
There you go.
With John Schmelk and Jeff Eagles.
And the Bucs, a team that also has made some changes, and they just added Deshaun Jackson. So they will take you through what to expect from Tampa Bay. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll see you next time right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live.